Coal powered the industrial world for almost two centuries, but in the U.S., it's now in a precipitous decline, undercut by cheaper natural gas from fracking and its climate and health hazards. Miners have died by the thousands underground, and on April 5th of 2010, the worst American mine disaster in 40 years occurred at Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia. A huge explosion ripped through the mine, destroying the rail lines underground and killing 29 of the 31 men working there. West Virginia's governor, Joe Manchin, went to the scene.
Rails, train rails that go back in, look like they've been twisted like a pretzel. That's horrific. That's an explosion that it just beyond proportion.
In that disaster, miner Tommy Davis lost his brother, his nephew, and his son, Corey. He remembered the last time he saw his boy.
I kind of turned around and walked away from him, hollered, "Hey, Bubby." He's like, "What, Dad?" I said, "Love you, buddy. It's love you too, old man. I'm going to go cut me some coal." That's my last words I heard from him.
Well, Don Blankenship, former CEO of Massey Energy, is now on trial in connection with that mine catastrophe. Blankenship was one of the most powerful coal barons who brooked no delays and opposed federal safety regulation of his industry, as he told thousands of miners and their families at a Labor Day picnic in 2009.
As someone who has overseen the mining of more coal than anyone else in the history of Central Appalachia, I know that the safety and health of coal miners is my most important job. I don't need Washington politicians to tell me that, and neither do you. But I also know that Washington and state politicians have no idea how to improve miner safety. The very idea that they care more about coal miner safety than we do is as silly as global warming.
Don Blankenship speaking in 2009. Well, to mark the start of the former CEO's criminal trial for allegedly lying about violating safety standards at the Upper Big Branch mine, Tim Murphy, a writer for Mother Jones magazine, published a profile called The Fall of the King of Coal. Tim Murphy joins us now. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Thanks for having me.
So you call your piece The Fall of the King of Coal. Who is Don Blankenship, and how did he become the king of coal country in the first place?
Don Blankenship is, I think, as he would like you to believe, a simple man from Mingo County, West Virginia, which is one of the poorest counties in the United States on the border with Kentucky along the Tug Fork River. You know, his mom ran a gas station and pulled the family up by its bootstraps. He was an accountant who worked at a coal mine to pay his way through college and ended up rising through the ranks of a company called Massey, which at one point was the family coal company. And with Blankenship at its helm, it grew into the largest coal producer in Central Appalachia and one of the largest coal companies in the United States. And Blankenship did all of this by running it essentially with an iron fist and starting to develop control of the political culture of West Virginia. He helped build the West Virginia Republican Party basically up from scratch to the point where it now runs the state legislature and has a number of national elected positions in the state. And he did this also by flouting federal mine safety rules and by crushing the labor union. So he very handily built a pretty notorious reputation, even, you know, in an industry that has not always, you know, had a great reputation.
Now, in this piece, you have a picture of Blankenship's estate, and it's this giant castle atop a beautiful West Virginia mountain. But of course, he was known for tearing off the tops of those same mountains for strip mining. What was Don Blankenship's attitude towards the environment there in West Virginia?
I don't think he really put too much thought into the environment in Massey's case. And, you know, they have, you know, a number of former, they're called mountaintop removal sites, otherwise known as surface mining sites that have been reclaimed, which is the word that they use. And essentially you spray a chemical product called hydroseed that, you know, plants all these non-native grasses on what has gone from being a scenic Appalachian knob into something more like a golf course. So that's essentially the end product of a mountaintop removal site, if it's effective. But in Massey Energy's case, some of their subsidiaries also had a lot of issues in terms of what happened with their coal waste. So for instance, one of the largest environmental disasters in American history was in eastern Kentucky, just across the river from where Don Blankenship grew up. And in that case, a site owned by Massey had a ton of coal slurry that was contained, you know, it's essentially like a dam of coal waste. And the dam burst, and it went out through an underground abandoned mine that was also owned by the company, and ended up shutting down the water supply in about 10 counties in eastern Kentucky.
Now, Don Blankenship is also known for his hostility towards organized labor. What was his relationship like with the coal miners' union, the United Mine Workers of America?
Well, there's an irony to his relationship with the United Mine Workers, which is that the union really had its baptism in his backyard. He grew up just down the street from the town of Matewan, West Virginia, which has been immortalized on the big screen as really one of the pivotal moments in American labor history, where there was an open-air shootout between United Mine Worker sympathizers and agents of the state and the mine companies. So, you know, there was actual bloodshed in the area's history over the right to organize. And Blankenship comes into this context, and he really makes his name with the company as, you know, he started off as an office manager, and he was the president of a small subsidiary at the time, and the United Mine Workers declared a strike against Massey, and Blankenship ended up sort of at ground zero of the strike, and he held the line for about 9 or 10 months. He likes to point to a TV that he owns that's covered in bullet holes that he says came from the union. It was an often violent encounter between the company and its guards and the labor union. But at the end of the strike, Don Blankenship had won. And, you know, essentially from that point forward, Massey was not a friendly place for unions.
So now Don Blankenship is on trial for a horrific disaster that occurred at his Upper Big Branch mine 5 years ago. What happened?
What happened, according to MSHA, the Mine Safety, you know, Health Administration, is that there was an accumulation of gas in the mine and a piece of shearing equipment hit a spark. And shearing equipment used to cut through the long wall section of the mine to get at the coal seam. And, you know, there's an enormous amount of friction there. And so if it's not maintained properly, then you're going to get sparks coming from it, you know, the piece of machinery hitting the wall. And in this case, that spark, you know, created an explosion in the mine.
I understand that the safety equipment that would have detected the large amount of gas in the mine was somehow disabled or dysfunctional.
Yeah, and according to the federal government and according to the state's own independent investigation of the mine after the fact, virtually everything that could have gone wrong in this situation really did go wrong. I mean, there were issues with the safety equipment. There were issues with the state of the mine. It was just covered in combustible coal dust, which you're required by law to clean up. And so the conditions of the mine were not right. The conditions for what happens if something goes wrong were not right. And the end result was that 29 people died, and it was the worst mine disaster in 40 years.
What was the company's attitude towards workplace safety? What was that like?
The company has really made a point during Blankenship's tenure to emphasize that safety was its number one priority. The term that Blankenship and the company used was S1. That was their policy, S1. Safety is number one. And implemented a number of things that sort of gave the illusion of safety. So for instance, they had a program that was essentially a rewards program for miners. And if you continued to accumulate days without an injury on the job that didn't cause you to miss work, you would accumulate points. And you could take those points and bring them essentially to the company store and buy things like hunting gear. The result, of course, was a perverse incentive. And so if you had an injury at a Massey mine, there was really an incentive from your colleagues to not report injuries so that you could use these points to get stuff that you couldn't otherwise get. You know, there were cases, I think, of, you know, miners getting hurt on the job and Massey management following them to the emergency room and requesting that they not take time off for work, informing them instead, you know, that they could simply sit in the break room all day, but they just didn't want to see their numbers take a hit from the lost time. They were notorious, especially under Don Blankenship's tenure, for relentless focus on the bottom line. He demanded reports from his mine superintendents about every half hour. And if he saw that coal wasn't moving in a mine, say, because they were working on a piece of safety construction, he would get on the phone. In the case of the Upper Big Branch mine where this disaster happened, that phone was literally a red phone. It was as if they were getting a call from the premier. And when you get a call from Don Blankenship, according to, you know, various workers who have worked in these mines and testified to the federal government, you didn't ignore what he said. You went and did exactly that.
Now, you quote in your article, you quote Don Blankenship at a rally 7 months before the Upper Big Branch disaster saying, "Washington and state politicians have no idea how to improve miner safety. The very idea that they care more about coal miner safety than we do is as silly as global warming." So I take it he wasn't a big fan of federal regulations.
He wasn't, and I think that really gets to the core of his significance in kind of the era in which he operated. He managed to take a state in which, you know, mining was heavily unionized, a state that had voted Democratic since the New Deal, and he managed to hammer home again and again and again that the reasons for the decline of the coal industry came from Washington and that it came from regulations. And that was kind of at the core of his political message and something that he continued to hammer on even up until the point where he was indicted. You know, he spent a lot of money in the political arena to push this anti-regulatory message while his companies were, in some cases, really making the case for regulation.
And I gather he was quite a promoter of skepticism or denial around global warming.
He was, yeah. I think his comments sound very similar to those of someone like Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe. After he left Massey Energy and shortly before he was indicted, he put out his own documentary, which pushed global warming skepticism. It was called Reg Session, and it made the case, you know, essentially that EPA regulations and those kinds of things were driving America's economy into the gutter. But at the core of that argument is that there's no point to the regulations and that things like global warming are really just a hoax, you know, perpetrated by folks like Al Gore.
So he does get indicted, as powerful as his political connections are and such. A federal indictment is brought against him. What's the case like against Don Blankenship?
Well, I should say the indictment in itself is kind of unprecedented almost in every instance where there has been prosecution in the aftermath of a disaster. And they've gone after, you know, a mine foreman or something like that. So on one level, the case against Blankenship is something that's new and might give people in southern West Virginia a lot of hope that the government is finally cracking down. But then if you look at the indictment, you know, the case actually looks a lot different. What they're actually really going after Blankenship on isn't on coal miner deaths. There's nothing about 29 deaths in a coal mine in this indictment or in this case. In fact, Blankenship's lawyers have moved to make that something that isn't even mentioned at the trial because the government isn't doing anything about this Upper Big Branch disaster. What they're trying to send him away for is lying to federal investigators and lying to the SEC about his company's safety record. So it's not that he ran rough coal mines that racked up tons of violations and had a number of fatalities. It's that he wasn't being honest with Wall Street. And that's the one that threatens to send him away for about, I think, 26 of the 30 years that he's facing.
So let me see if I have this right. He's been indicted because he said things to investors about mine safety that turned out not to be true, according to the government. And so the Securities and Exchange Commission comes into play here. I imagine investors are quite angry given the price of coal equities has really just crashed in recent years. Some of the biggest companies have seen almost all of the value of the stock go away.
Yeah, and that's sort of the irony. I was talking to some miners in Mate Juan, West Virginia when I was down there. And, you know, obviously the situation for coal miners is pretty bleak right now. But as they put it, you know, Don Blankenship was reading his company's obituary in the newspapers that week just because Alpha Natural Resources, which is a company that bought Massey a few years back, declared bankruptcy just 2 months ago. They filed for bankruptcy. So the company that bought Massey for $7.5 billion is now bankrupt and looking to radically restructure its business. So over the last 4 or 5 years since Upper Big Branch, the industry has cratered. Hundreds of mines have closed. You know, thousands of workers have been laid off. So in some level, you know, the indictment feels sort of like a bookend in the current age of King Coal.
Tim Murphy is a writer for Mother Jones. His latest piece is called The Fall of the King of Coal. Thanks so much, Tim, for taking the time with us.
Thank you.